Welcome to Self Care on Board. So today we have Perry here. So please, Perry, introduce yourself and share with us what is it that you do and why did you get to do what you're doing?
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, Geraldine. Thank you for having me. My name is Perry Idle. I am 32 years old. I came to Thailand 7 years ago when I was 25. I had been pursuing music in Los Angeles for a while and decided after my first mushroom ceremony with a psilocybin experience and a meditative, you know, holistic approach, not just at a party, right? But through an insight I received from that ceremony, I decided within 30 minutes to sell everything and move to Thailand and didn't look back on that decision for a single heartbeat. 6 months later, I was here. COVID happened, never left. And got introduced to yoga, to Qigong, to Tai Chi, Kung Fu, to management of businesses, yoga schools, hostels, marketing, Vipassana retreats, deep into meditation. And it's all kind of accumulated in a lot of experience that I now get to share with a lot of different types of people.
Wow. Okay. So you had also this epiphany, like some of them, just sell everything and leave. Now, how did you grow up? To just give a little bit of a context why this may be a big deal.
I grew up very traditionally in a conservative upper middle class family. Parents are engineers. One sister's an architect. The other's a scientist. Happy family. Had tennis court in our backyard. Played tennis and soccer and had friends and very normal, you know, suburban kind of childhood in the U.S., South Carolina and Tennessee. So I went off to college to study economics. But after a year, my friends, the two best friends, actually decided to drop out to pursue music in Los Angeles. And so I had this big epiphany of, wow, I don't really want to do business. I don't really want to do economics. I want to study music. So my parents agreed to let me study jazz. So I actually got a bachelor's degree in jazz guitar. So I spent 5.5 years in school studying that. And it gave me a good foundation for music. And then went to LA, got a little lost. Priorities got a little shifted. I decided, you know, I realized through that ceremony, I'm doing this for the wrong reasons. I'm doing this for recognition and approval. I didn't feel I was enough. I wanted to be seen. And that was covering up my true passion for music. So I had to let it go.
So you had to let it go. That's your gift. That was really your first gift.
Yeah. It's come back now.
Yeah.
But for a time, I knew I had to let it go in order to have space to reapproach it in a healthy, loving way.
Good. So what has Kupangan so far given you with all these years, especially during COVID? This was a different way of living than some other places in the world.
It was a special place to be during COVID. It was its own little bubble. There was a lot of turmoil in the beginning. People were freaking out. Everyone left and ended up just having a handful of people that stayed. So it felt like a summer camp. And, you know, you would drive, you know, from Jalaklam to Thangsala, a 20-minute drive, you'd see like two or three people and you'd know all of them. And so it was a place for me that allowed me to heal, because my whole life I actually have been going through depressive cycles. We can get into that, but essentially that hadn't healed. I had moved from the US to the other side of the world, but the depression, of course, came with me. So after about 5 months of, you know, this, oh, I've been moving, everything's new, I can kind of forget my troubles. After a while, you know, they do resurface.
Absolutely.
So it was a space for, it was a place for me to be with myself. I spent a lot of time alone, a lot of time meditating. And that was kind of what allowed me to move through.
I think that's why we come back.
Yes, why I came back.
Yeah. So would you like to share more about this emotional and this mental state?
Of course.
So if I don't call it, I call it a temporary feeling of depression, because I don't always think it is good to identify yourself directly with depression because we fall in and out of it.
Absolutely, yeah. To me, I think the mind is very multifaceted. We even use terminology like, oh, a part of me wants to go to that, but a part of me doesn't. You know, a part of me wants to do this with my life, a part of me wants to do that. So in everyday language, we express that there's different parts inside of us. And I, the way I see that is as we grow up, the mind has different experiences that it develops different ways of responding to. So you can say, you know, a difficult experience that caused you stress or anxiety, you learned a way to cope with that, learn to deal with that, a way to protect yourself. And that kind of gets embedded into your mind as like a psychological muscle memory, a way that you respond. So the way I see, you know, depression is exactly how you say it. I'm experiencing a part of my mind that has taken over the rest of it that does not feel hopeful, does not feel joy, peace. It is completely disconnected from its source. And that to me is, it's like a dark cloud, and it just fills your mind. It fills your heart. And when you're in it, you can't see beyond it.
So what did you do? What were your tools?
I spent a lot of time with teachers.
Yes.
Online. That's one of the main reasons I now teach.
Online.
Because I was able to receive so much light and wisdom from interviews on YouTube, from people that were expressing their own journeys and their own transformations. And even in my darkest days when I'm just, I mean, I won't go into details, but just darkness, I would just keep a YouTube video playing in the background. I would play the audiobook of The Power of Now or New Earth, Stillness Speaks. I would have Eckhart Tolle's voice, Alan Watts. I would have him speaking around me. And part of my soul recognized the truth in their words. I felt the resonance, the recognition. And that allowed me to slowly breathe a little more. And, you know, one of the big things that actually shifted it, and, you know, I say this, my life is divided into two chapters. I mean, many chapters, of course, but two main ones, before ayahuasca and after ayahuasca.
So where did you do this ayahuasca?
On Koh Phangan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, two nights in a row. And if people, you know, if you haven't taken ayahuasca, it's not just some psychedelic drug that just makes you see things that aren't there. The human body is an antenna. It is constantly receiving information.
Yes.
Electricity that it then creates a narrative around. This is what I'm seeing. This is what I'm hearing, feeling. So when a new substance is introduced into the antenna of the human body, that antenna is expanded to receive new information. You're not making things up and hallucinating. You're perceiving things that are already there, but you normally can't see. So with ayahuasca, what was visible to me was absolute pure love.
Yeah, she has this effect on people.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I'd been meditating for, I mean, weeks and weeks, like months, actually, like a lot. I was 5 days water fasted. I was a very clean vessel because what's inside of you makes a difference where you
go. The entities will come out.
Something will.
Yes, the dark entities, especially during the ceremony, it can get there.
100%.
Yeah.
So people puke a lot of times.
Yes, exactly. That's the mapacho, the nicotine. Yes. No, I did only the mapacho cleanse, okay. Which helped me.
Good.
Emotional release. That was last time I came to Koh Phangan. I actually did the thing that people hate doing ayahuasca because I helped me to release something, for not only the parasites and the toxins, but the emotional release.
Okay. So was it like this experience of an emotion arises and then it overcomes you? And then something just viscerally releases it?
Yeah. I mean, and also the way we were not smoking it, we actually drank it. And then we had to drink a lot of water. It was a one-to-one. This lady was really holding space for me. And I had to literally vomit in a bowl to see also the parasites, the worms, and like everything came out. But it was the emotions. It was really the everything that I held in my whole lifetime and even maybe before. So I do I've never done ayahuasca, but it is really funny that you speak about this now, because you're the second one within 24 hours who's bringing up this topic again. And this may be the 15th time that it comes back to me. Huh. And I'm like, okay, I got the message.
That's also how I approach psychedelics. I don't seek them out.
No.
But they find a way to find you. And if you listen and are open, then I think it's the right time to do it.
But coming back to you, so what happened after this ayahuasca experience?
My heart was just wide open. My heart was wide open. And I remember looking people in the eye with this whole different sense of recognition. I said, do they know? Do they know this?
Yeah.
And you know, I realize a lot of people don't. A lot of people don't see it.
No.
They are completely blinded by their own story and perception of their own self, and they don't understand, as you know, as I didn't, that we're all just one awareness.
Yes.
The awareness perceiving my mind, my experience, my vision, it's the exact same awareness perceiving yours. And it's the exact same awareness inside of all things. And it's not separate. It's not even far away. It couldn't be closer.
What happened after that? How did you change your life?
I began to wake up very early before sunrise. And I would drive to this beautiful place on the island, up on a mountain, and watch the sunrise. And that became my ritual. And I would sit for hours in complete presence. And there was this beautiful connection I felt to the darkness, that when the sun rose, nothing in the garden changed, but everything changed. The light changed the entire experience of what I was seeing. The stuff didn't change, and yet the entire perception changed. And that's kind of what I felt was happening inside of me. I wasn't changing, but my perception of myself, my dimension of consciousness, had shifted. And everything was beginning to change. I began to not be afraid to show up to people, to be seen by people. I realized I'm worth speaking.
Yes, absolutely.
And these little things started to add up. And over time, I just opened my heart, developed friends again, and started doing things, playing music again, performing, writing songs. I just started living again.
Yeah. Was this the only time that you've done it, or did you have another ceremony?
Ayahuasca only once, two nights in a row. But I've done, you know, MDMA, mini mushroom ceremonies.
As a Bufo?
Done Bufo.
Yeah.
Bufo twice, full on, dark room, huge dose, like complete. The way I describe that experience is essentially like if the mind is a house of mirrors, the, you know, light of awareness is shining on one mirror and it's reflecting to this mirror, which then reflects to this mirror. And awareness is in the center and it never sees itself. It only ever sees the illusion of what's shining in the mirrors, which is our thoughts, our story, our emotions, whatever. On Bufo, when you take enough, all those mirrors melt away and there's nothing for the light to shine on. There's just awareness. And how does light know itself without an object to reflect upon? There's nothing to reflect on. It's this emptiness, and yet it's so full. And I know it sounds like all what all the spiritual teachers say, but it's actually, it's a vibrant, living emptiness.
So what I have perceived is before has a more masculine energy than ayahuasca, more feminine.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. And from all of these experiences, is there anything that you would like to continue or repeat again? And if so, would you want to mind to share why?
So psilocybin, 100%.
Yeah.
Psilocybin, I think, has a very special characteristic to it. The if the human vessel is an antenna, then psilocybin, when it enters this antenna, the consciousness that it brings into your awareness has a very special quality to it. And to me, it's purely about love and connection and the joy of being alive. And the one message that after, you know, always comes back to me after mushrooms, also Bufo, kind of everything, all the, you know, the psychedelics, they always have one message that repeats itself. Don't ask how, don't ask why, just enjoy being alive. You can't know. It's a mystery for a reason.
You can't know. And that is very true. You just follow the path and you go with the flow without knowing when or why. It's divine timing and how. And we love to control the how.
Yeah. Well, we love to think we do.
Oh, we love to think. It's just an illusion if we know how to control it. But it's very true. Do sometimes some people do ayahuasca or Bufo to get answers. Mm-hmm. Now, from my own experience, I have not gone that deep in psychedelics because my meditation practice, I'm tripping already out when I do the pineal gland meditation and everything. And I've had a lot of respect for it because I may have not been that grounded to be able to do that. So even though it comes back to me, I'm like, okay, maybe you should look at it. But I think this is really important because some people go into it wanting to seek answers. What do you think about that?
I think if you're called to seek, you should seek.
Okay. Yeah. Has it anyhow changed profoundly, obviously, from your relationships? You said you opened up your heart more. You were more outgoing. You were open to meet new people. Have there been also moments, any moments of frustration or like moments, helplessness or powerlessness?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Even after the heart opening, yeah, still the chapters would come, but they would be shorter.
They would be shorter.
They would be shorter and shorter. Starting out 6 months at a time, then 3 months, and then two, one. Now, a couple hours.
Yeah.
A couple hours. And the reason for that, I believe, is because I stopped.
You just go inside of it.
Yeah. They're going to happen. Growth, happiness, nothing ever grows in a straight line. You always go up and down.
Up and down.
And so when you realize like, oh, I'm feeling down. That's right where I'm supposed to be. I'm about to go up again. Or if you don't do that, then it's like quicksand. You're trying to like scramble out of it and you're just sinking deeper. What you resist persists. If you push it away from the physical level, that's actually giving something energy, right? The same thing on the mental level and the spiritual level. If you push something away, you're giving it energy.
You're giving it energy. And that's what people don't realize, that if you think about a person, you give it energy. You give this person energy. You actually literally have to let it go.
You take energy away from
absolutely
yourself.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So now, what is it that you do now? What have you changed in your life? And you left Thailand also. Mm-hmm.
Trip away was never planned for more than 3 weeks, but turned into 18 months for life's own reasons. Mm-hmm. It was a great, beautiful, purposeful time to reconnect with my family, reconnect with music on a deeper level, many good reasons. However, now, after actually letting the island go, thinking I would never come back, I think it's allowed me to return to it with a completely different perspective and different purpose. So we all have gifts. We all have gifts. And I believe we're meant to share them. I believe we should always be learning something. We should always be practicing what we're learning, because learning is not truly learned unless it's expressed in action. And we should always be sharing what we learned.
Absolutely.
Because if it's helped us, we should try to help others. So my gifts are, I have many, but I really am passionate and gifted in movement.
Yeah.
I love movement. And so it brings me great joy to teach things like Tai Chi and Qigong. Mm. I used to be a personal trainer, but my clients would always say, I love how mindful you are. Mm. I love how you're bringing me to my breath. I'm bringing Qigong elements into weight training. So that's a passion. I love training myself. I just love the state of being that I enter into. The feeling is just incredible. And what I'm now trying to share more of is what's happening on the neurological level. Mm. When you go inside of your body with your awareness, it's called somatic attention.
Yes.
Then the brain operates under resource scarcity. So it can only give a certain amount of energy towards one part of it at a time. And so the default mode network, which is where it's the engine of the ego, it creates psychological time, the story of past and future, your regrets, your anxiety, your stress, it all lives in the default mode network. And so that's where most of the intention in the brain and the energy is. So if you focus on the sensations inside of your body, then you withdraw energy from that part of the brain and it reallocates in this part called the salience network. The main part of that network is the anterior insula, which is where internal sensory signals are integrated with emotional cognitive processing. Yeah. And so what happens then is you feel more peace. Your prefrontal cortex comes back online. You can think more clearly. Your vagal tone rises, which has a cascade of good, powerful benefits. It positions you physiologically as a leader. Your gaze is steadier.
Yeah.
Your movements are more fluid and slow. Your breath is more rhythmic and patterned. Like, so much happens whenever you bring your awareness inside of your body.
It's very true. And this is something that stays a shift in the coaches, let's say. It's movement. It's not just a personal trainer, a fitness trainer. I think we bring the multifaceted and multi-hyphenated kind of toolbox here.
100%.
And I think that is the future in longevity too. So you maybe have observed the whole longevity craze, I would say.
Yeah.
Tell me, what do you think about this?
Longevity. Well, personally, I'm not trying to live forever.
Me too. Honestly.
It can be done, so why try? I do believe in potential. Mm. I do believe that the pursuit of potential is built into nature. If we look at nature, if we look at forests, they grow as much as they can. Trees grow as high as they can. Animals, they live to their fullest, naturally. They're not trying to do so because they think they should. They just do.
Yeah.
So I believe that every human's, you know, purpose, if you will, outer purpose, because we have an inner purpose too, which is awakening. It's the separation of thinking and awareness. But on the outer level, you want to have the ability to expand and grow. So speaking about longevity, I believe it's, you know, our individual duty to live best we can, which means, of course, taking care of the body, keeping it clean inside and outside, and not sacrificing for any type of gain, as in, let's just take steroids for an example. You're sacrificing so much hormonal balance and the intricate, you know, processes of the body for what? For the superficial muscle gain.
Yeah.
Peptides are a huge thing. I don't know much about them, but I imagine it's, you know, I don't know, drinking too much coffee or something. Or I believe it's almost like borrowing energy from the future.
Borrowing energy from
you're going to have to give it back.
Yeah, to give it back. Yeah, this is actually a nice way of seeing it. Yes. Mm. Yeah, this is a big topic now, peptides. You see it everywhere. And I'm like, I do believe if you can still do it naturally, foods. And I looked it up, actually. I looked up at all the peptides and see how can I replace them with food. Because I always think this is more sustainable than actually injecting. But I know they have a faster... They are very efficient, very fast, and I'm in this longevity space, but I'm quite aware of that. And I'm like thinking it's not always the quick fix solution.
Yes, I think obviously if it's too good to be true, it is. I do ice baths 20, 30 minutes a day. I do sauna. I get my heart rate up for probably 30 to 60 minutes every day. I weight train. I eat super clean, real whole food. I sleep well. I don't drink I drink some. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I can smoke a little joint and go get like two puffs maybe and go get a massage, you know. I do enjoy, but I don't ever try to let go of moderation. And I try to stay as natural and holistic with the earth and my natural cycles as possible.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That my main thing is I haven't done much deep diving into all the biohacking and stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But I imagine if it's too good to be true, it probably is.
Yeah. No, that's something. Yeah, that's another topic though. But it's interesting how you see longevity, and especially so you also practice Tai Chi Gong. How did you get to Tai Chi Gong?
Mm. Well, I first practiced Qigong with Ferdinand, one of the teachers at Body Connection, 5 years ago. I was sitting in a coffee shop and we started chatting, and I really respected him, looked up to him, and he taught me this hard Qigong. So not the soft, flowy stuff, but the Shaolin way of strengthening your body, through flexing your body, the intention and mindfulness. And it was the most difficult thing I'd ever done. It was so hard. And so I became very, just like my mind had just been kind of broken. Like, oh, you can strengthen yourself without lifting dumbbells,
yes.
Right? It was a big shift. And then I started understanding, why does that happen? And so there's all these processes like innervation and irradiation. And, you know, the fascia has a piezoelectric charge where when it's under tension, the substance itself creates an electrical charge, which is then distributed throughout the entire body.
Yes.
The fascia encompasses every nerve ending, every organ, every muscle fiber. So you're, you know, when masters say, feel the chi, they're aware of the piezoelectric charge being generated by the
fascia.
Absolutely.
That's what it is. Yeah.
So it's science, and now we're just backing it up. It's not just spiritual stuff.
Yeah.
So the deeper I got into it, I was like, this stuff is real. I can feel what's happening inside of my body. And then, of course, the neurological effect that we talked about began to come online. I would just feel amazing when I would do it. And from there, Tai Chi happened when I studied at a Kung Fu retreat in northern Thailand. I ended up working for them for many months and fell in love with this the Shaolin Tai Chi form that basically was created by the Shaolin monks after the Chinese government destroyed their temple because they were a symbol of strength and hope for the people. So they destroyed the temple, and then they were watched by spies as they rebuilt. And so they weren't allowed to be training hard. And so they actually disguised their forms into a slow, soft, gentle Tai Chi form.
Yeah, the slow form, but actually every movement has its purpose also.
It's everything has a martial aspect.
It's martial arts.
It's really
and
cool.
It can also be practiced fast.
It can, exactly.
What is it? It's Kung Fu.
Yeah, I was just my client today. I showed him, you know, I'm like, why do I need to twist my body and do this? I'm like, because this is a block. Like, if you're going to block, you need to have some momentum, just extend your arm down.
Yeah.
And everything in there has a martial, direct martial aspect to it.
Yeah.
So I fell in love with that and it was very natural to me. And to be able to practice Tai Chi and Qigong, as you know, effectively is you have to have a very strong proprioceptive awareness of the 3D map of your body in space. And then the interoceptive awareness of the energy flowing through your body, like down this microcosmic orbit and through the hands. And so it's just this extremely immersive experience that is meditative. It's good for your posture and your scapula and fascia, and everything's just open. Your breath and just unification of mind, body, spirit. Mind, body, breath. Breath is spirit, right?
Beautiful. Oh, it's very true.
What's your experience? How did you first get into Qigong, and why do you so practice it? Why do you like it so much? And Tai Chi, what is your experience with it?
When I got diagnosed about 3 years ago with my tumor, I thought, you know what, you need just change something. I was a yoga therapist for all these years, but then I thought, you always wanted to do martial arts. Just do it now. So I looked it up. Where can I do it? There was no school around where I lived. I'm like, Shaolin Temple Europe. So I went online. Also, I study online. I'm better off studying online.
Okay.
Because it's just, if you have the self-discipline, you do it, you know, and when you're interested in it. And then I actually started, I practiced with Shifu Shihanyi, who is now, you see them everywhere on YouTube now. It was mainly Kung Fu. And then I realized, wait a minute, what about Tai Chi and Qigong? Then I realized the effects of it. And like you said, it does address the whole layers of your multidimensional being. And it helped me to heal. That was another tool to heal from the tumor and the autoimmune disorder. Because the meridians were activated. It was able to flow. And the resilience, like you, Ashley, you know, when you burn, when you stay in a posture, that is alone that. People think like, oh, it's very soft. No.
It's hard.
It's hard.
Yeah.
To stay in one position and you just breathe. And you feel this burn and you go inside of that pain.
Yes.
And you're like, whoa, am I like masochistic or why am I doing this? You know, and then you go inside and you actually then suddenly changes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you release this and you're like, that is trauma stuck in your fascia, in your connective tissue, in your energy. Exactly there. Then I realized, and I had visions even, like standing in Mabu, I had visions. I'm like, oh, I got this from there. I got this from there. Tears were running, but this release, tears were running constantly. I mean, there was a moment in every retreat I was at least crying
Wow.
once. So that was definitely, and I'm still practicing it diligently every single day.
Wow.
So I'm now starting to become a teacher. And I'm always open to new versions, and I'm ready to also look at different masters and different, because I like that. It's also with yoga. I started with power yoga and then Ashtanga, and then now I'm yoga therapy. It's different.
Yeah.
But we change. So you allow yourself to step in to be someone else. Yeah, but I understand exactly what you mean. And it helped me to also go to the gym, to do functional movements, to relax in moments of discomfort.
That's it.
Isn't it?
That's it. Even when having a conversation,
yeah.
If you can be aware of, oh, I'm tensing my legs and my butt and my chest. Like so often people talk to you like this. And when you relax into your whole presence, your whole demeanor, everything changes. So yeah, it's about relaxing in moments of discomfort. I think that's kind of sums up the spiritual path of daily life.
Absolutely. Or you're in a meeting with someone and you know exactly something is wrong. You can feel it in your body. Your body is literally giving you signs and you're like, cannot pinpoint it, but be aware. Don't know what is going to happen, but it will manifest, it will show up, and you will know when. That's the flow. That's where you know. And you're like, okay. My body gave me a screeching sign in my gut, like literally my stomach had a cramp, or I felt a tension somewhere else. And I'm like, why? Why is it happening? Okay, look at it. Because you're getting a sign here. It's a very subtle. I think I felt like I went deeper into my spiritual practice with Tai Chi Qigong. Even though I'm a yogi, but, you know, we have many different hats, so it's okay.
You're stardust. I want to go deeper into that pain thing that you talked about. What is it like for you when you take your awareness inside of pain?
When you have undergone a certain amount of suffering, and we always, when I was younger, I tried to avoid to suffer. I tried to anticipate how I could avoid it, how I could control a circumstance. This is the loss of a boyfriend, if this is any pain or physical or a loss of your father, but you can't control it. So if you already suffer so much with this anxiety, trying to control how someone thinks about you, starting to manipulate an outcome, we women are really good at this. I'll be very honest. You know, I was very good at it. But then what did it bring me? My nervous system was constantly on the edge. I was walking on eggshells. I was not being myself. I took energy from myself. And then I thought, you know what? Why not just go inside of the pain of this loss and go into this fear? What is the worst that could happen? Many times death, that's where you feel like, you know, when you think like you're totally broken and you hit rock bottom and you're like, okay, what can be the worst? You can be on the street, you could die. Are you scared of death? No. And then it's fine. But if you go inside of the pain, when people ask me, what do you mean by that? Go inside of the pain. Go inside of this uncomfortable emotion that is fear, that is sadness, or that is grief, and look at it. What was it that happened in your past that made you feel that? And you want to avoid that feeling. But if you embrace that feeling, you understand it's only temporarily and it's going to go away. Then it will release again. And it's the fear of going inside of pain, I think. People just don't want to feel that.
Of course.
Yeah. But what is it for you?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that when pain arises, that's the time you can release it.
Yes.
When it's not here, doesn't mean it's not in you. It just means it's not presently active. So you can only actually release the pain, the trauma, whatever it is you're dealing with, in the moment that it arises. And that's important, because then you look at it completely different. You don't say, oh, why is this here? I don't want this. You say, okay, here's my challenge. I see you. And you look at it in your mind, with your mind's eye, you look directly into the face of the pain. And this is what I do every day with an ice bath. I sit in there for 20, 30 minutes and I look directly at the pain that's encompassing my entire body and I breathe into it. If you try to push it away and protect yourself from it, you only hurt more. But if you relax into it and let it in, you realize it can't hurt you because it is you. It's part of you. Yeah. So by trying to fight your pain, you're fighting a part of yourself.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we're the entirety of existence. Like, we're all of it. So trying to not experience part of it is futile, first of all. And second of all, it causes you suffering.
It causes you suffering. And you become also more resilient the more we look at it as... The pain comes also from a set of conditioning and programming that we have received, certain belief patterns that certain things should be this way. That's where we actually inflict pain to ourselves without knowing, because we're not conscious of it and we sabotage ourselves. And you're very right. You know, I was looking at one certain emotion in the last week's anger. When I came here to Koh Phangan, I realized, ooh, there's still anger in there. Mm. And I'm like, that's your liver, your kidney. What is that else? And I'm like, you do detoxing at the moment, really. You're doing a heavy metal detox and a parasite cleanse. This is coming all out. But I was really waiting. So when is the sadness and the grief coming out? Because that's the underlying emotion. Mm-hmm. Until it just came out. I'm like, ooh, there we go.
Wow.
There it is. And I'm embracing it. Come on, come out, please. In the past, like, I have to hold it together. What do people think of me? I have to hold it together. And now I'm like, yeah, just came. It's how it is. And it happened to me in a restaurant where I had a ramen. And this guy looked at me, well, there's a time and place when to do this. And I'm like, oh, fuck you. Sorry. You know, but this is how we grew up.
Yeah.
There's a time and place when to do it.
And whoever told you that as a child, your voice is still in your head, still saying those same words, and you think it's your voice. You think it's truth, but it's not.
It's not. It's an illusion. You have to cut through that veil of illusion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's very true. If you don't know what emotion that is that's supposed to come out, then it's not time for us to see it yet. Very true. What was for you in your life a most pinnacle moment where you said, okay, I have to change something?
There were a few. I'd say the first one was the realization that I didn't want to do business in college. I wanted to pursue music. It was the first time that I followed my heart rather than my mind.
Mm.
And that was a big shift. And it led me exactly where I am now. But the second main one, the second main one was actually also in college. I was an RA, a resident assistant. So I would, you know, kind of manage the floor of the dorms. And one day I'm just sitting there in my room and I look over at my shelf and I see the Bible that my grandmother had given me on my shelf. And it struck me that I hadn't even opened that book in far longer than I could remember. And for some reason, in that moment, it just hit me. I don't believe in God. I can't move forward with my life until I decide whether I'm okay with that or not. So all of a sudden, there was a path in front of me. Am I going to continue to not believe in God? Or am I going to choose to believe in God? I was 20 years old. It was a big moment. And I thought of my grandmother. She's so loving. Pure, full of faith, prayer, just a gorgeous woman that I've always wanted to emulate. I've always, you know, I always told myself, I'll be godly when I'm her age. I'll become godly when I'm older. And I was like, yeah, I want to be like her. I want to believe in God. So I chose to believe in God. And that began a 5-year journey of deep Christianity. Because I grew up a Christian, but, you know, having a deep personal relationship with the universe is not the same as going to Sunday school. But I decided to actually pursue God. So I began reading the Bible every morning. I mean, 30 minutes underlining, highlighting front to back multiple times, memorizing verses. I went to Calcutta, India for a month and worked with Mother Teresa's charity. I did all this homeless work and I was really serving, really studying. I would write down, you know, my vices and my sins and I would pray. And I mean, I became very Christian. And what that did for me was many things. First and foremost, it developed my self-awareness. It gave me a sense of surrender. Because when you pray, what you're essentially saying is, I'm not in control. Something else is in control. And I think that's important to embody a sense of surrender. I could go on and on about this. I'll kind of wrap it up. There was another thing too, though, the dark side, which is that it fills you with a sense of guilt, of shame. I am to my core a sinful being. I'm not okay, and I need to be saved. By God, by something.
Yes.
And I have to follow these rules, and I have to believe this. I have to make this mental contract of this idea of this person that did this means this for me, and that's the only way I can be saved for eternity. As Alan Watts puts it, it's a very far out game that you're playing.
Yes.
The highest stakes you can imagine. It's like, you don't believe in this, you're damned for eternity. So that, you know, that was deep and I don't think it helped my depression or anything. And the reason I was in Los Angeles and I kind of shifted a bit because I realized, okay, the fruits of God's Spirit, Galatians 5:19, I think, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, these nine fruits, they were present in so many people I was meeting who were not Christian. They were present in these Buddhist monks that I would see speak online who were not Christian. I'm like, well, that's God's Spirit present in them right now. And yet, because they haven't said in their mind, this little tiny box of thought, they haven't said that this person is my Lord and Savior, God's going to just disappear. He's going to just remove himself when they die and cast them into nothingness or whatever in hell. It just didn't make sense to me. It was a crack in the ice. And so from that moment on, that was the third pivotal moment, perhaps, where I decided, okay, I'm going to pursue truth. I'm not going to pursue the concept of God. I'm going to pursue truth. And if Christianity is truth, I'll come back to it. But if it's not, then I'm going to expand beyond it. So I now see Christianity as a beautiful container with roots of truth. But the main core issue I see is that it's teaching people to pluck the apples from the tree rather than being the tree themselves.
Yeah.
So we try to mimic the actions of someone who's connected to the divine source, who then flows with compassion and generosity and care and healing and all these beautiful aspects. But we don't try to embody the dimension of consciousness that they embody. We just try to mimic their actions like monkeys. And it's with the best intentions. I'm not at all putting it down, but I don't think that it provides an actual framework for embodying that dimension of consciousness, the same that yoga or Buddhism does.
Absolutely, I agree with you. I actually had a similar kind of development. Also, I grew up Christian.
Okay.
I used to dance in churches. Yes,
really?
Absolutely, yeah.
So
and I prayed.
How that shipped for you?
I had a moment like that. It were two moments. One, after the confirmation, there's another step, the formation. And I wanted to go and to these classes, but I was in the ballet academy and I was dancing 6 hours per day, you know, 6 days a week. So I spoke to the priest and he said to me, if you think this is justified to be sinful and jumping around and dancing, God would not want that. And I looked at him like, God gave me that gift. And that's where I realized that's the institution of the church.
Yeah.
And Germany was really strong because we also give the church tax, you know.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, no way. I can believe in God, creator, but I don't need to be part of the church. So I realized that. Then when I came to Rome and I saw all of these statues and the symbols and pointing out exactly, you need to repent. Mm-hmm. You are sinful. And I'm like, no, we're not. We're supposed to have the divinity within ourselves. You know, we have it within. This is not what is actually getting taught here. But I felt exactly it. These were the moments. And it's actually because I prayed every single day. And funny enough, I pray every day.
Right.
I meditate, I pray. I pray and I say thanks. And I pray for what I need to, because it's part, I do believe within spirituality, believe in something higher than yourself. You know, whatever that is, divine, universe, life. We call this in yoga, the philosophy of yoga, Ishvara Pranidhana.
Mm.
Within the Yoga Sutras, it's trust.
Trust.
There's something, you know. Many times there's a divine interplay behind our backs. We don't know what's happening. Something gets woven in. And just trust. Don't ask the why and the how.
Yeah.
What we have spoken about before. I understand. I get that.
Mm.
And I loved going to the church, you know. I actually really enjoyed it, but I felt like I was ejected. I was booted out.
That's such a common story.
Yeah.
People experience this rejection when there should only be love, acceptance.
Absolutely.
So people, even the leaders at the churches, a lot of times do not embody the most fundamental principles of Christ's teachings.
Wow, if you're going to go into this subject, there are many people in the spiritual world who don't embody that. We know that.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
I think the thing that sums it up, and this is why I fell in love with the Tao Te Ching. I've listened to that book truly over 1,000 times. He says, the master teaches without a teaching so that there will be nothing to learn.
Yes. And it's just invoking pretty much the teaching, the Guruji, what we say, within you. It's not outside of yourself. Not outside of yourself. It's just, we are just guides that helps you to empower that within you. Yeah. Beautiful. So, good. Let's talk about where we can find you, where we can find your classes, your offering, and yeah.
Idolmastery.app. So idol as in IDYLL.
Yes.
Mastery.app. Yeah, that is kind of where I host all teachings. It's idol means peaceful, means serenity, means bliss. So that's kind of, it's mastering this state. And I have a movement course teaching Qigong and Tai Chi.
Mm.
I have a muscle mass and mobility course teaching strength training and bodybuilding and mobility and flexibility. And then I have a peak performance mindset course. So it's about, it's what I developed for myself whenever I would fall into these states of darkness. It's basically the ladder I created to climb out. So I've used it and refined it for the better part of over a decade now.
Yeah.
And it's what I teach. And it's very simple, but it incorporates routines, meditation, physical practices. There's a lot of really powerful stuff in there. So there's three courses. You can get them all together for a bundled price. And then also my online coaching. So I have a mentorship called the Self-Sovereignty Blueprint. And so
self-sovereignty.
The core principle of that is, you know, focusing on the inner purpose and the outer purpose. So if you think about, I look at it kind of like a mountain. On the outer purpose, we want to climb to the top of the mountain. But the inner purpose is digging beneath it to the diamonds at the core. So we want to do both. It's not one or the other. It's develop your inner purpose at the same time, and they fuel each other. And the inner purpose of every human is to awaken, to feel the distinguishable presence, the space between one's awareness and that which one is aware of.
Yeah.
And when we're imprisoned, we don't have space. We're in a cell. We're confined. Imprisonment is when we don't have space. So freedom is when we have space. The same goes for the mental level. When we have space between us and our thoughts or our emotions or experience, we have freedom to not be controlled by them, to choose different paths, different reactions. Yeah. So it's all about developing that inner freedom.
Yeah. And you're also part of Body Connection Movement.
Yes, I am.
Perfect. So this is not a coach, not an instructor.
Yes.
part of Body Connection Movement.
Yes, teaching Tai Chi on yeah. there as well. I'm really excited to create more challenges, create more courses, yeah. collaborate with other coaches and meeting you and honestly yeah. like learning, just seeing a little bit of the forms that you learned that you know from Tai Chi and Qigong.
Yeah.
It's inspiring because there's not that many people that practice it.
It's actually true, but it's also inspiring to see it from your perspective, like having the masculine, you know, like version. No, absolutely. And we learn a lot. And I looked at the way how you teach and it is very educational. It goes deep inside. This is not for everyone, you know, like we, I mean, and that's what I also said to Ninad, we're not everyone's cup of tea, let's say.
You and can't try okay. to be.
No.
I think it's not about coming up with some new idea to teach. Yeah. It's about being the proper vessel for teaching to flow through for yeah. these specific people.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, in yoga, they have the different paths of yoga. There's yes. jnana, right? Then there's kriya. Then there's bhakti, yeah. devotion. Not all of it is. Some people have the intellectual path. And
yeah.
that can be very helpful. That's how they arrive at
yes.
self-realization, but some people do it through bhakti, devotion, service, and yeah. through energy practices, and there's a fourth one I'm forgetting, but yeah, so
I forgot even yeah, but it is very true. So for those of you, please check out his app and also his courses. And is there any message you would like to relay to the audience? So we're talking about yachting crew owners, and working on board of a yacht is stressful, and there's a lot of burnout, and there's also addictions, but there's also a lot of good things if you have the passion for the sea, you are on the sea. Any message you have to give out?
I would send out the reminder that your outer world is a reflection of your inner world. So if there is disharmonious situations and circumstances, patterns, habits in your life, focus on giving what you would want to receive. So if you're not feeling a peace, if you're not feeling seen, respected, loved, you can't be angry about that, or else you'll continue to repeat that pattern.
Yes.
So practicing true compassion for people, which can simply, and this is something I do all the time. I say, when I see anyone, even you, multiple times, sitting here, I've said this inside of my mind, say, I want the best for you.
Yeah.
And I mean it.
Yes.
And what that is, it's in Buddhism, it's called metta.
Yes, metta.
Loving kindness. So I see people at the gym and I feel, oh, I'm a little triggered by them. I'm like, I want the best for you. Whatever your goals are, I want you to achieve them.
This is so funny that we come up with this, because it's exactly what Ninad said in the interview today. Yes, we bless the people.
Blessing them.
Blessing them. And if they even trigger you and you're like, okay, that's been your teacher, but I want the best for you.
Yeah.
And that's how you cut the energy cords also. You do. You cut those energy cords, anything. Don't let it linger around you. So you don't do it for yourself, but you actually mean it, because it's the oneness. We're not separate from each other. No.
You poison yourself when you poison someone else.
Absolutely.
You give water to yourself when you nourish someone else.
Yes, absolutely.
So I'd say if you're in a stressful place in your life on these stressful ships, and I almost worked as a cruise ship musician. I almost went into that world. Focus on creating the change inside of you first.
Absolutely. It starts from within.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Geraldine. This has been a pleasure.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
That's good. Thank you.
Beautiful people.
Welcome. Goodbye. My name is Geraldine Hardy, and I'd like to introduce you today to Alina, the Sanctuary. Alina is a concept that can be implemented in any existing property, a resort or hotel, a clinic or well-being center. We're going to combine longevity technology that you can find in stem cell therapy, infusions, peptides, and longevity technology machines with the ancient practices, including traditional Chinese medicine, yoga, Ayurveda, energy and frequency medicine, naturopathy, and homeopathy. These tools will be combined and formed into an individual protocol, customized and personalized to the patient, to create a deep, profound healing journey. I'd like to share with you my journey. About 3 years ago, I was diagnosed with a benign tumor in my left breast. My autoimmune disorder also came back. I knew I had to really embrace profound change and transformation. So I worked on my physical layer with the longevity technology, but on my emotional and mental layer, I had to change my belief systems. So I used traditional Chinese medicine, yoga and Ayurveda, movement practices, energy healing and quantum healing techniques, as well as past life regression sessions to be able to release my trauma, my emotional wounding that was the root cause of my diseases at the first place. And I thought to myself, if I can do this, everyone can do this. We see these days a lot of longevity technology coming up. It is almost a $7 trillion industry. What we are missing is really, how do you heal the emotional wounding, the trauma? And this is pretty much the root cause of any disease. With all of our partners at Alina the Sanctuary, we are creating protocols that will be individualized and customized to the patient's needs. Please join us on this journey that will be able to expand in growth immensely, and we are able to take the franchise to various different properties in the world. We have a light asset model, so we are offering the concept, not directly a property, nor do we lease a property or acquire an asset. This has been done deliberately that keeps us being able to move fast in the market at the moment, and be able to implement the concept easily and existing structures without having to renovate, to acquire an asset, or have any delays in building something. We are seeking $500,000 to $750,000 that will actually include the marketing, the branding, the most important part, creation of the protocols, bringing in together all the facilitators, creating a membership model that will be useful for each of the facilities where we implement the concept, and being able to create extra value in any of the given entities that need some extra help with consultancy. So please have a look at the deck. It's very straightforward. We are asset light. And maybe we're going to have a Series A, but for now, we're going to try to create revenue and generate revenue with existing clients that we're working or speaking and collaborating with at the moment. Thank you for your time. My name is Geraldine Hardy. You can reach me on Geraldine at GeraldineHardy.com. Thank you.